On this episode of Finding Christ in Cinema, we're talking about The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. Is Bilbo a picture of Christian mission? How about Thorin's quest for Erebor? All that and more in 3, 2, 1... And admission is free. Grab a bowl of popcorn, extra butter, of course, and find a seat smack dab in the middle. It's time for Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number one. I'm Michael.
And I'm Brendan.
Join us, and together we'll dig deeper into the silver screen classics of yesteryear as well as the box office hits of today. We'll take a closer look at the stories they tell and see if we find the face of Jesus looking back. And we're going to explore the deeper meanings of these films, their plots and their twists, the characters and their choices, and how we can relate them to the gospel of salvation. And ultimately, our Christian walk. You are tuned in to Finding Christ in Cinema on GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Brendan, our very first official episode. The holidays are past, a few weeks past. What did you do for those holidays?
Man, I gotta tell you, my holidays started at the very end of Sleepy Hollow, which was back in October. A couple weeks after we finished that one, I got a call from the director at The Fly saying, hey, would you want to be in the Christmas play? And I said, sure, just let me know how it can help. And the next day, I had a script in my hand. So we were going straight off of Sleepy Hollow right into The Games Afoot. And then right after The Games Afoot, which ended the first week of December, we went right into another production of It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh.
I know.
How was that?
It was actually really good. We did it as a fundraiser for one of the local police officers here in town. Her daughter has cerebral palsy, and we were helping to raise funds for the mother to get a handicap accessible vehicle.
Oh, wow.
And I haven't heard the final number, but the last I heard, it was upwards of around somewhere between $3,500 and $4,000.
Nice.
So, hopefully that'll be a blessing to them. That's what we were hoping for. So
that's great. You know, and that reminds me, I was going to ask you, hey, what were some of your favorite holiday movies this year? And of course, for me personally, It's a Wonderful Life is way up there. And now I'm thinking, oh, I can't wait for about 25 weeks from now or so when we get a when we can record a bunch of episodes for holiday movies. Oh. How about you?
I'm trying to think of what I started watching, actually. I got into The Hunger Games. You know, I watched the first movie when it came out, and I was kind of excited for it. And then I saw the second one, and I saw where the action's really starting to pick up with it, with the whole game maker being part of the revolution. I thought that was pretty cool. It warmed me up because I caught some fire. Get it?
Oh, bad. Yeah. That, you know what that deserves?
I love it.
Yeah, we had in our family, we do a marathon at Christmas time. So starting the day after Thanksgiving, because we have a ton of holiday movies. And so, you know, we're watching It's a Wonderful Life, and we're watching all the Santa Claus movies, and we're watching Arthur Christmas, and we're watching, you know, Polar Express and White Christmas, mm-hmm. and so many, and of course the classic cartoons and claymation of yesteryear, you know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and we're watching the Charlie Brown Christmas and all of that stuff. I can't wait until holiday time next year to be, or this year actually, to be talking about, and I can't wait till the end of the year to be talking about some of those films and how profound they are. Especially, I can't wait to talk about Patrick Stewart's Christmas Carol.
Is he your favorite Scrooge?
Yeah.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So, we'll have to.
We'll get there. We got a whole year.
Friends, stay tuned. It's like I said, it's about maybe 20, 25 episodes from now here on Finding Christ in Cinema. You know, we are so excited to get this show on the road after planning and a lot of sweat and tears over the last 6 months or so.
6 months.
Yes. It's been in the planning stages for that long, and we are just going to go. We're going to just jump in it with both feet. Are you ready? Let's go over to the movies and talk some news. Brendan from the Rumor Mill. Fox is planning an adaptation of Marvel's Fantastic Four versus X-Men. A financial website called The Motley Fool. I've heard of these guys. They've had a nationwide syndicated radio show. I don't know if they're still doing that, but they've been around for quite a long time. Regardless, their website says that they are privy to information which says that Fox is primed to adapt a four-part series from 1987, a story arc of the Fantastic Four versus the X-Men. In fact, the original text reads in part, "After multiple movies in their respective franchises, Fox has now decided to combine the Fantastic Four and the X-Men for an, quote, Avengers-style movie that could pay off huge for shareholders." The new movie also comes as Fox is rebooting the Fantastic Four series with new actors and actresses. Is that exciting to you?
It's exciting, but it's a little confusing. I mean, didn't Fox just do the Fantastic Four not even 10 years ago?
Hey, well,
it doesn't feel like a reboot.
They rebooted Spider-Man. They rebooted the Hulk. They reboot these superheroes as they're trying to figure out this whole universe that they're building based on the Marvel and DC Comics.
All right, next up, Noah. The new film from director Darren Aronofsky is set to release in March of 2014. That's this year. The only problem is that the different sources say different release dates. Some say March 8th, which is the beginning of the month. Others say March 28th, which is 4 weeks later. Either way, I'm just curious as to when in the human narrative this version of the story takes place. Why? Well, I'll tell you. The costumes alone, as seen in the previews, almost look like some sort of prequel to the futuristic steampunk style. And I've also come across some synopses claiming the world of this film is a post-apocalyptic...
Back up. Try it again. Okay, you ready?
I've also come across some synopses claiming that the world of this film is a post-apocalyptic...
Yes. Okay, continue on.
A post-apocalyptic.
Apocalyptic?
Yes. We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? There's all kinds of Bible movies coming out. I saw a report the other day that I forgot to clip that they're talking about David. They're talking a new movie based on the Bible miniseries that was such a smash hit last year on cable. And now the one that I am the most excited about... Ridley Scott's Exodus, starring Christian Bale as Moses. There's a first look picture, and you can see that in the show notes on fcc.gctnetwork.com. In our show notes, there will be a link to this story. You can see the picture and see if you get excited as well. Yes, next year, Hollywood is returning to the Holy Lands because, quite simply, the public wants religious-themed movies to return.
I wonder why.
Yes, movies in the tradition of the Cecil B. DeMille classic, The Ten Commandments, starring Charlton Heston, of course, The Greatest Story Ever Told, and even more recent films like The Passion of the Christ, or even that cable TV smash hit we just talked about, The Bible. Exodus also stars Sigourney Weaver and Ben Kingsley, plus more. And apparently this is a UK website because it says it hits UK cinemas on December 5th of 2014. I hope it hits ours first because I can't wait to talk about that. And seeing as how The Gladiator is one of my all-time favorite movies, I will be there watching Batman save the Israelites and saying, "I'm Moses.
I'm Moses."
All right, let's go. Let's go over to the movies. You want to go hand in hand. Let's go.
Truly, the tales and songs fall utterly short of your enormity, O Smaug, the stupendous.
We are the dwarves of Erebor. We have come to reclaim our homeland.
I offer you my help.
Now that we know it won't betray us.
We don't. There is no king under the mountain, nor will there ever be.
It will not end here. With every victory, this evil will grow.
Legolas has grown very fond of you.
Do not give him hope where there is none.
You have no right to enter that mountain.
I have the only right.
We've been blind. In our blindness, our enemy has returned.
I found something in the goblin tunnels.
What did you find?
My courage.
Good. You'll need it.
Dragonfire and ruin.
That is what you will bring upon us. He cannot see beyond his own desire.
I will not risk this quest for the life of one burglar.
His name is Bilbo.
Brendan, how many times did you see the film?
Twice.
You stinker. I only saw it one time, and what a wild ride it was.
Oh, both times.
So let's go ahead and let's give a little bit of a review there. You know what? In fact, you go first.
All right. Oh, man. I'll tell you, I loved it. You know why? Because I saw it twice. It was just so... so exciting to sit there. One of my favorite scenes was the entire barrel riding scene. I loved it. I love it when cameras stay in one shot for 5 or 6 minutes and not cutting back and forth. There's no
jump cuts.
Yeah, none of those. It's just one flawless. Well, I wouldn't say flawless. I'll get to that later. One seamless scene, and just following the dwarves down the river. With the elves helping defeat the orcs and helping them escape, and it was quickening, honestly.
Yeah.
One thing that, speaking of that scene, that probably is my favorite scene of that movie. There was a couple times where the camera, it looked like it was filmed with a home movie camera. Does that make sense?
Did I know you see what you're that? Talking about. Did yeah, I did see it.
And I don't know why that was.
Now I didn't see it in 48 frames per second. And so I would imagine that effect was completely different at the higher frame rate.
Maybe. I also heard someone say that might have been one of the 3D shots, or a few of the 3D shots, because I didn't see it in 3D.
Neither did I.
But that, besides that, that kind of just, that was like a little salty aftertaste. But the whole thing, the whole movie, and I loved it. I really did.
Why?
Because there were so many different characters that I could identify with. There were so many different situations that I felt like I could identify with. One of them being, what's the Hobbit's name? Bilbo. Yeah. Well, you know, one of them, it was a joke, Michael. It was a joke. Oh, gosh, I even lost it now.
Well, he lost his train of thought. And so, again, I really need to know from you what was good about this movie.
Can I say everything again, once again?
You can. But anything specific besides the barrels out of bounds is the section of the book that was from. So, in other words, if you were going to tell somebody... a friend of yours that had never seen it, had really no intention of seeing it, how would you sell them on the movie?
Well, honestly, I would sell them with the whole aspect of the old folk legends, the fantasy world. Even though it's not our reality, it's a different reality that works so much like ours. You have the dwarves that have their different traits, the elves that have their different traits, the hobbits that have their different traits. It's one big melting pot, much like America is, much like the whole world is right now. And even in all this calamity, and even in all this, I would venture to say despair and gloom, there's still hope that we can that we can go on.
Yeah. Hey, you're making good points. Let me ask you this. Have you ever read The Hobbit?
I did, but only because I had to.
Okay.
Oh. I had to read it in ninth grade English class.
Okay. And so I would imagine that you haven't read The Lord of the Rings.
No.
Okay. Well, I won't go any further than that because I could say, then you haven't read The Silmarillion. See, I am going further. Okay. According to Plugged In Online, which is part of Focus on the Family, they said that Peter Jackson should have put the disclaimer, inspired by The Hobbit. John D. Ratliff, if I'm pronouncing his last name properly, author of The History of the Hobbit from 2007, opined that while he enjoyed the movie, he wished that there'd been more Tolkien in it. Now, personally, I went with two of my kids. We came out, and the first thing out of my mouth was, I would have loved that movie if I had never read The Hobbit. Mm. And I'm not going to get into go any further than that, really, because I am a Tolkienist. I am a purist. I am what they call a ringer. And for me, the literature comes first. And I will only say this, that although it was an amazing movie, visually and exciting, and again, if I hadn't read the book, I would have thought that this was, because I'm prone to love fantasy. I loved The Hobbit as a kid. And obviously, if you see on the bookshelf behind me, if you can, there's all kinds of Tolkien books and stuff. My son and I do a Tolkien podcast. And I would have loved the movie, but it was a completely different story than The Hobbit.
Yeah.
People could say, "Oh, well, no. They're on a quest to go to Erebor and reclaim the kingdom from the dragon." Yeah, okay. Okay.
Oh, okay.
And so anyway, it was an exciting ride. Now let's let parents know that if you haven't seen it, which I'd be surprised if you hadn't seen it. If you haven't seen it, you're probably not inclined to see it. But there's a whole lot of head lobbing in this movie. Heads are flying like crazy.
Oh, no, he means literally.
Yeah.
As in, swords chop them off.
Yes, left and right.
Just one note on that, though. Even it is violent at some points, that didn't faze me because the characters that were getting their heads lopped off, they were evil. You know,
I understand that.
You know, it doesn't hurt to see the bad guys get their head lopped off.
I understand that. I just for people out there that are sensitive to such things, like, well, but regardless, it was a fast paced. This John D. Ratliff, and I'll put a link to his article as well as that link to the Plugged In Online review, because Plugged In Online is a great site for movie reviews. But regardless, we'll put those in the show notes, and you can go and read them all yourself. One of the things that he said also was that it was a lot like Indiana Jones. You know, it's just, I mean, just nonstop action.
Oh, okay.
And whatnot. And he was speaking for both sides. Now, he is a Tolkien scholar, but he's trying to temper what he was saying, you know, presenting the movie in a positive light. With the exception of him saying that he wished there were more Tolkien in it. But he was saying that movie fans, because this is a movie that really splits the viewing audience. You are, for the most part, you can generalize it like this. You are either a movie fan or you are a Tolkien fan.
Okay? Oh.
Movie fans, you know, some Tolkien fans will say, well, that'll get them to read the books. Other Tolkien fans will say, you'll never get them to read the book because they'll read a couple of pages and go, this is nothing like the movie, and throw it away. But then, you know, so he'll say that the movie fans were complaining about the first installment of the trilogy, An Unexpected Journey, that it was too slow. The Tolkien fans were lamenting the fact that there was not enough character building or what have you. So it's just one of those kind of movies. So that aside, let's go ahead and see what kind of spiritual content we can find in it.
Well, first off, I want to look at the character of Thorin Oakenshield. He's basically what's driving the plot. because he's the king of the mountain, or the king under the mountain, excuse me. It's his desire to get returned to the mountain that's been taken over by Smaug. And he's just got some traits that I want to look at. He's very apathetic, and he's very callous, and maybe sometimes for his own good. I'm going to quote what I can from memory. I will not risk the quest.
Do you mean this?
I will not risk this quest for the life of one burglar.
His name is Bilbo.
That exactly. But actually, just before I get to that point, I'm going to make one other point. I will not risk the quest for the life of one dwarf. Now, he says that upon leaving his fatally ill nephew in Lake Town. And who was the nephew? Who was that? Keely or Billy?
There's Keely and Feely.
Feely. Which one was fatally ill?
Keely.
Keely, he was attacked by...
No, Feely.
Who was it?
They're the GQ dwarves.
Oh, yeah, the ones that are very tall for dwarves.
Yes.
The good-looking ones. He gets shot by an arrow from the orcs, and it starts poisoning his blood. And by this point in the movie, his total color has changed. He's gone from a bright, youthful glow to a gloomy, sad gray. And he's practically dying. And it's for this reason that Thorin leaves his own family behind as the dwarves go to face the dragon. Now, back to the clip you just played, I will not risk the quest for the life of one burglar. This is after Bilbo has already gone into the lairs of the mountain, and he has confronted Smaug, and he's running around trying not to get burned by all the fire breathing. And, of course, this shakes the whole mountain where the dwarves are on the outside. And who is it that offers to go in and help him? The one that says his name is Bilbo? Which I can't remember his name.
Oh, Balin.
Balin. Balin suggests that they go in and help him. That the dwarves go in and help Bilbo fight the dragon. And what does Thorin say? He says, I will not risk the quest for the life of one burglar. But what changes his mind? What gets Thorin to go inside and actually seek out to help Bilbo defeat Smaug? The fact that Balin identifies Bilbo by name, his name is Bilbo, giving Bilbo a sense of familiarity, a sense of oneness with the dwarves. Even though he's not a dwarf himself, he is still part of that quest. He's a part of that mission team, if you will. The key word for Thorin right now is tunnel vision. He is too apathetic and too callous for his own good. Now, my question, and hopefully how this wraps into the spirituality, do we as Christians become so wrapped up in our own fulfillment of the Great Commission that we become too callous and too apathetic to other people and forget that our mission is other people? You see, Thorin isn't where I see Christ, but I see the need for him, and I'll be interested in seeing his progress.
Well, you don't remember the book very much, so you are going to be very interested in seeing his progress at the end. And so am I, as the way that Peter Jackson is presenting this Tolkien much-beloved classic. Okay, here's one of the problems that I have in answering this question, is that the Thorin in Peter Jackson's movies is much different than the actual Thorin.
I was afraid of that.
However, one thing that he shares with the real Thorin is that he is a dwarf, and dwarves suffer from a fatal sickness. See, the dwarves were created by an entity named Aule. And I'm not going to get too technical out there, but Aule is in Tolkien's Legendarium is like an archangel.
Okay.
They have creative powers in Tolkien's Legendarium. And he was created, or the dwarves were created by Aule, because Aule couldn't wait around for God. Eru Ilúvatar, the One, is the God in Tolkien's writings. He couldn't wait for him to do what he was going to be doing. He was too impatient. He created dwarves, and these dwarves, because of this, were attracted to the substances of Middle-earth and Arda as a whole. Arda is the world in Tolkien's writings. And they suffered from a gold lust. They were, so when they were showing Thror and Thrain and Thorin as leaders, as kings of the dwarves, as being single-minded about mm-hmm. their treasure, mm-hmm. That is true. That is true. So that is one thing. But so here's what happens when you suffer from greed. First of all, we can go to Proverbs chapter 15, verse 27, where it says, "A greedy man brings trouble to his family." Okay, what? How can you apply that to this film? Brought trouble to the family. Attracted the most dangerous dragon.
Is a fire drake from the north?
Yes. Okay. And if you know anything about dragon lore in Middle Earth, Smaug is very impressive. Okay. Very impressive. A greedy man brings trouble to his family. A greedy man brings a dragon to his family.
To the whole mountain.
Okay. A greedy man brings a serpent to their family. A greedy man brings Satan to his family, but he who hates bribes will live. Good verse there, very apropos. And what happens when you are greedy is that pushes out love. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, starting in verse 1 and going on, you know, it says, "If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I have become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal." In 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, the apostle is basically telling us to imitate good and love one another, for love is of God, and specifically in 3rd John, verse 11. "Beloved, do not imitate evil, but imitate good. Whoever does good is from God. Whoever does evil has not seen God." And greed brings the opposite of love. Do you agree?
I agree. Yeah, I was silently nodding my head.
I was pondering.
For those who couldn't see that,
those are my thoughts on can we become too wrapped up in fulfilling the Great Commission? Listen, we are broadcasting on the GCT network right now. It is the Great Commission Transmission Network, and it had better be motivated by love. Or else, this whole network, this show, is just a noisy gong. Clanging cymbal.
Yep.
So that is that's my thoughts on that. I wanted to bring out some ideas on Bilbo himself, of course. We have to talk about Bilbo.
Well, now, of course we do. He's the namesake.
Now,
of the movie.
Is he a Christ figure? I mean, he left the comfort of his home to save others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he faced the dragon, the serpent, adversary, the accuser, Satan, because Smaug is the adversary, and he's accusing people of things, and he is a perfect type of Satan. Or is Bilbo a good picture of Christian virtue? Because we know that going back to John... Love, the apostle of love, man. 1 John 3:17-18. "But if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him? Little children, let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and in truth." You could go back to the Old Testament, Deuteronomy chapter 15. "If among you one of your brothers should become poor in any of your towns within your land that the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart or shut your hand against your poor brother, but you shall open your hand to him and lend him sufficient for his needs, whatever it may be." In Leviticus, the same type of thing. "Let your brother, if your brother becomes poor and cannot maintain himself with you, you shall support him as though he were a stranger and a sojourner, and he shall live with you." Now, why would you want to treat your brother like a stranger or a sojourner? It's because how important those people are to God. Matthew 5:42. "Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you." Luke 6:34-35. "And if you lend to those from whom you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to get back the same amount. But love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for He is kind to the ungrateful and the evil. So maybe we see Bilbo as a picture of the power of God in the gospel, believers, Christ, everything that's related to the gospel, as in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, 27 through 29, but God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, even things that are not, to bring to nothing things that are, so that no human being might boast in the presence of God.
Look, I know you doubt me. I know you always have. And you're right, I often think of Bag End. I miss my books. And my armchair, my garden. See, that's where I belong. That's home. And that's why I came back, because you don't have one. A home. It was taken from you. But I will help you take it back if I can.
Do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. But love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. Bilbo was treated poorly by Thorin so far up into the movie, except for when he saves Thorin's life, and then Thorin comes around, doesn't he? Because Thorin is driven to get the Arkenstone, to reclaim the kingdom of his people that were mistreated. And Bilbo is, I would say, of the three things that I presented, Bilbo is a picture of the power of God in the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts to add to that?
Actually, I've got pulled up on the on IMDb Gandalf's quote when Galadriel. This is, or just taking a small little trip back to the first movie. Galadriel.
There you go.
I'm putting the emphasis on the wrong syllable, guys. I'm sorry. She asked Gandalf why the halfling. And this little speech, I think, is the whole reason why Bilbo is in this. Saruman believes that is the only great power that can... Oh, boy, I goofed that one up.
Oh, try it again.
I'll try it again. Gandalf replies, Saruman believes it is only great power that can hold evil in check. But that is not what I have found. I found it is the small, everyday deeds of ordinary folk that keep the darkness at bay. Small acts of kindness and love. Why Bilbo Baggins? That's because I am afraid and he gives me courage. And I know that's not from The Desolation of Smaug, but I feel that is so much a part of what you, Michael, are saying, but it's also just another summation of...
Well, it is 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 27.
27 and through 29, yeah.
Yes, but let me read that again. But God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, even things that are not, to bring to nothing the things that are, so that no human being might boast in the presence of God. Yes, Bilbo is, we can learn from Bilbo. There are some bad things that Bilbo does, but we all do bad things. Let's glean the good things. And there's a little nugget for you guys, you listeners out there, that you can talk to your friends. You can talk the gospel when you're discussing the Hobbit films. That is what this show is all about. And from here, we would move right into the next segment, which will be the email, voicemail, listener feedback section of Finding Christ in Cinema. So since we don't have any of that on episode number one so far, we're going to encourage you folks to send us your email to FCC, that stands for Finding Christ in Cinema, FCC@gctnetwork.com, or call into our voice line and leave us a voicemail there at 507-407-GCTN. We will play it on an upcoming episode if it's appropriate to. We'll be more than happy to do that. And then after that little section, the listener feedback section, we would go right into the lightning round. Take it away, Brendan Taylor.
The Last Temptation of Christ. Nothing more than the artistic expression of the humanity of Christ. Good production quality, great music composed by Peter Gabriel, for all those Sledgehammer fans out there. But not worth all the hubbub it received upon its release, in my honest opinion. Now, personally, I like Martin Scorsese as a director, and I like Willem Dafoe and Harvey Keitel as actors. But the story is a reflection of how Jesus was tempted in every way, just like we are. And I'm quoting Hebrews 4:15 on that. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who is in every respect has been tempted just as we are, and yet without sin. Now, just a fair warning, this movie is rated R for its portrayal of Mary Magdalene. But even then, at that scene, I was so nauseous with remorse for the actual scene that at that point the images weren't a stumbling block for me, if you know what I mean. The Last Temptation of Christ, be a filter, not a sponge.
I have been on a... Well, let's preface it by saying I'm a Whovian. Hello, I'm Michael T, and I'm a Whovian.
Oh, no.
I am on a Doctor Who bender. Started with the reboot of the series in 2005, started with the Ninth Doctor, Christopher Eccleston. He is my doctor. And just, in fact, the whole family is on a Doctor Who kick. Everybody in the family, except for the ones that are too young to watch it, that would be too spooked by it. Excellent, excellent. I never knew that British TV could be so good. But it is top quality. Of course, this show has been around since 1963. It is 50 years old. It did take a little bit of a hiatus there back in the, was it in the late 80s or in the 90s. As a matter of fact, Sylvester McCoy, who plays the part of Radagast, was the seventh Doctor in the Doctor Who series. But here's the thing about it. This is what I'm really enjoying, is I'm seeing Christ in Doctor Who. How, do you ask?
How?
I am seeing him because he is the Doctor. He is the great physician. He does claim, the doctors here, things are going to be better. His partners and friends and people that get to know him, here's the doctor, everything is going to be great. He is the doctor, that's his name. He has no other name. The great physician. And he has a special love. This man has been to all times and to about every single planet that you could go to that's inhabited within, you know, this series' universe. But he has a special love for human beings. So as you're watching Doctor Who, you pull out some of those Christ-like attributes, those messianic attributes about him. But number one for me is he's the great physician, and number two is his special love for human beings. Now, we are going to go right into our compare and contrast segment. So this is where we really need listener participation with emails at fcc@gctnetwork.com or voicemail at 507-407 GCTN. Brendan, would you like the honors of taking this section?
I would, but I'm unaware of the question.
Well, you have to come up with the question.
Okay, actually, no, I do have a question.
Okay.
And you're going to have to help me out on these elvish names, too.
Okay.
Legolas and the she-elf.
Tauriel. She's an ad hoc character. She does not exist in Tolkien's world anywhere.
Well, darn it. Okay, but she's
Wait, you mean this lady?
When did we allow evil to become stronger than us?
It is not our fight.
It is our fight.
Yes, that lady, exactly. And I don't know if that was Legolas in the quote. That was Legolas?
Yes.
Okay. Here's my question. How can we as Christians identify with Tauriel and Legolas, who are going out of their world, another picture of someone leaving the comforts of their own home to help a greater cause. Now, and I also want to throw in a plug in for the king of the elves, of the wood elves, Thranduil.
Yeah, well, that's good enough.
Hey, I'll take it. What does he say when he's speaking with Tauriel? He says, other kingdoms are not my concern. That, again, is another picture of being apathetic and callous to the needs of others.
It's the opposite of the gospel call.
It is the exact opposite of the gospel call. I forgot where I was going with my question.
I don't know. How would you see Tauriel and Legolas' actions? How about you contrast those two? Because one's doing it for a different reason than another.
There you go. Okay, then there's the question. For what reason is Tauriel seeking out to help the dwarves, and what reason is Legolas following along?
Okay, so if you call into the voice line at 507-407-GCTN, which translates to 4286, 507-407-4286, you give it 30 seconds. Tell us how, compare those two characters and Christians, right? Obeying the gospel call, going out, like the Great Commission. They're both going out, but are they both doing it for the same reason? Sound right?
Good enough for me.
All right. Well, then you have been tuned in to Finding Christ in Cinema, as a matter of fact. It's part of the Great Commission Transmission Network, using new media and social networking to go into all the world and proclaim the gospel to the whole creation. To find out more and to partner with us, visit us at gctnetwork.com. You can go to our website at christincinema.com. Real simple. There's no finding on there. It's just christincinema.com. Or shoot us an email again at fcc@gctnetwork.com. Call that hotline, 507-407-GCTN, 507-407-4286. Follow the GCT Network on Twitter at twitter.com/GCT Network. Be our friend on Facebook at facebook.com/GCT Network. Add us to your Google Plus circles at google.com/GCT Network. Follow us on, subscribe to our channel at YouTube, youtube.com/GCTNTV. Go to the iTunes store, search for Finding Christ in Cinema, and add that to your podcast collection, or find us in Stitcher. On Stitcher Radio, just do a word search for Finding Christ in Cinema. And for all the things that we do at the Great Commission Transmission Network, including our youth ministry podcast, Youth Challenge Today, go to gctnetwork.com. Anything else, Brendan?
Not from me.
And that's a wrap!